13 minutes to 11, rounding out the program with some really, really wonderful guests who've given up a part of a very busy weekend to come in and say hello. I'll start with co-founder of the Bladder Cancer Australia Charity Foundation and cancer survivor, Anthony Moore. Good morning to you, Anthony.
Morning, Greg.
And you brought along your co-founder, companion, and also life-saving buddy, Associate Professor Nathan Lawrenshook. Welcome to you, Nathan. How are you?
Good morning. Great to be here.
Unfortunate circumstances probably drew you two together some time ago. Tony?
That's right, Greg. You know, I noticed a change in my urine and didn't do anything about it. It was sitting a little heavier in the bowl, so eventually I urinated blood and off I went to the GP and saw Nathan, and sadly I had a very serious bladder cancer.
All right. Not an uncommon story, Nathan, I'd imagine, that there are some signs that people either don't keep an eye out for, or like a lot of us choose to ignore, thinking it's just something that'll pass and all over and done with.
Absolutely. And certainly a message to take home for everyone is that if you do see blood in your urine, it's absolutely abnormal.
And it's never a good sign.
No. And look, fortunately, a lot of the time it's a benign condition, but we do have concerns. It's often a malignant condition or a cancer, and that's why it's something you should see your GP about.
We might get you to put us in the picture about bladder cancer. It's certainly a little bit under the radar, if I'm allowed to say that, in cancers. But it is the fifth most common form of cancer, is that right?
That's right. Across the board, it's more common in men than women. In men, it's around about the fourth and 11th most common in women. It most commonly occurs in people who've smoked. About 70% of people with bladder cancer have smoked. It usually occurs in people over the age of 50, so a little bit older. And it's a malignancy, as you point out, that a lot of people don't talk about or have a lot of thoughts about, because I guess it's not high profile like a lot of other tumours that are commonly discussed in the community.
Would somebody like Tony, and he can answer the question for himself, I suppose, detect anything different about what it feels like when they're passing urine or anything before you get to these other signs, Nathan?
I didn't experience anything like that, Greg. I do know some people urinate more often when they have a bladder cancer, but no, I just noticed a little change in my urine, and then, as I say, when I urinated blood, I thought, oh, I'm in trouble here.
All right, yeah. So the bladder, I don't pay much, nobody does until something goes wrong with it, Nathan. How big? What's going on in there? What have we got?
So the bladder's an interesting organ. Think of it like a balloon that's got a muscle layer and a skin layer on the inside.
Okay.
And basically it performs two functions. One is to store urine so that, you basically don't have to go to the toilet all the time.
Yep. Okay.
And then obviously to expel the urine when it's an appropriate time that's socially acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, the skin layer is exposed to anything that is inside the urine. So a lot of people may not make the connection between smoking and the bladder. However, the toxins that are inside cigarettes eventually make their way into the urine. The urine is then made by the kidney. It's then collected in the bladder. And the issue is that the contact time of that urine with the bladder is particularly long, and that gives those chemicals a lot of time to actually upset the skin lining of the bladder. And hence, over time, that can develop into a cancer.
How big is a bladder normally?
Okay. Bladders collapse and expand depending on how much urine's there. Typically, a male bladder will hold 500 mils and a female bladder will hold around 400 mils.
That's about the size of my drink bottle.
That's correct.
How big is my bladder when it's got nothing in it?
When it's got nothing in it, it's about the size of your fist. So a little bit.
That's a pretty
smaller.
Clever little device then, isn't it? The way it grows and accommodates and whatever else.
It is. It's extremely extraordinary, really, the way the muscle interacts with the rest of the body.
So what happens when we get is there a typical bladder cancer? I mean, is it a growth type thing, or is it grow inwards or outwards, or what happens?
That's a really good point. So typically, the bladder cancers, the most common ones we see are what are called non-muscle invasive, or they're the ones that just sit on the skin. They tend to grow out and they actually look like a piece of soft coral. You know, they're papillary. They look like a little tree, like foliage. The second type, which occurs about a quarter of the time, are what we call muscle-invasive bladder cancer, and they're the ones that tend to grow inwards towards the muscle. They tend to be flatter and more solid, and they're ones that patients are more at risk, because once you're into the muscle, you're then into the bloodstream and into the lymphatics, and that can be a source of spread of the tumour.
Tony, what were you lucky enough to have been dealt? Can you tell us about
I had
your...
a neobladder. So I had my bladder removed because it was cancerous and dangerous to me. And Nathan made a neobladder for me out of bowel tissue, which is a new sack to hold my urine. And I urinate as I normally did. But a lot of people don't have that surgery. They might have a bag to collect urine if they lose their bladder.
When Tony came to see you, Nathan, what was your conversation with him? Did you throw him a whole lot of alternatives of how he might, how we might treat this or how we might work through this together? Or were you fairly certain that the bladder had to go?
Yeah, look, Tony's case was a little bit unusual. In fact, he had a tumour inside a little pouch within the pouch, if that makes sense, called a diverticulum. People might be aware of diverticular disease that occurs in the bowel. It can also occur in the bladder to a somewhat degree. But that makes it a little more dangerous because there's not much muscle behind that little sac to protect you from spreading. So his case was a little unusual. In fact, I discussed it with we now, particularly urologists, we have a, what's called a multidisciplinary approach to most of these cancers nowadays. In other words, we meet up not just with ourselves and make a decision. We meet up with a group of urologists, radiation oncologists, medical oncologists, pathologists and radiologists in these weekly meetings. And through those multidisciplinary approaches, we can then come up with a plan to discuss, say, with Tony. Now, of course, there's always more than one option, as you point out. And these days we do try to, I guess, make it a patient-driven approach. But sometimes the patient will have some degree of choice, but also the actual tumour they have will also often point and decide where they go. So after much discussion with in Tony's case, we felt that given his age and given the potential for the tumour to spread further, which fortunately it didn't, that removing the bladder was the way forward. But in certain other cases, there may be other options such as radiation or even just going back in and scraping the tumours out when they recur. And we often do that with tumours that have that non-invasive component or the ones that are just on the skin. So
a lot of these procedures you talk about... Not done in open surgery. No. They're done sort of, in fact, going up through the urinary system, is that
correct? So sort of keyhole surgery, if you like, except we use the natural orifice being the urethra in the male or the female. So we're able to have these little instruments that go up there and we can do a lot of work inside the bladder without having to remove it. But there are cases like Tony's where, unfortunately, that option isn't available.
Tony, did you have, I mean, precautionary chemo or radiation therapy or anything?
No, I didn't. I was reasonably aggressive myself with the treatment too, Greg. I had some friends, you know, who had had cancer in the breast, actually, two girls. One was aggressive, one wasn't. We lost one and the one who was aggressive. So my decision was, you know, if it's a nasty cancer, let's get it out and I'll deal with the consequences later.
All right. It's 5 minutes to 11. Saturday breakfast on ABC Radio Canberra. Delighted to be joined by Tony Moore, who is a bladder cancer survivor, and his doctor, Associate Professor Nathan Lawrenschuk. And the two of them are here together because they are co-founders of the Bladder Cancer Australia Charity Foundation. And why do we need another foundation, Nathan?
Look, this was born about through necessity. People will be aware again. Cancers like breast and prostate have a lot of advocacy and a lot of patient information and material for patients, their families, and to educate the public as well as other medical practitioners. There is no such there was no such organisation in Australia. And I think I was born out of frustration. I work at the Peter MacCallum Cancer Centre in Melbourne. And, you know, every time I saw a patient with bladder cancer, I was having to send them to websites in Canada where I train, or the US or United Kingdom. There was no really good local information. Of course, there's the standard information that the Cancer Council provides, which is fantastic. But I think a lot of the time we have to have more in-depth discussions and there's a lot more issues that happen. And Tony was aware of these. And we felt that there was a real space for this in Australia. And that's really, you know, this came from necessity.
Our foundation in that, I hope, Tony, it has sort of tax deductibility or whatever else.
It's absolutely.
It's a vehicle that people can become active supporters by donation for research and a whole lot of other activities,
yes,
I would imagine.
You know, bladdercancer.org.au is the website. We've released a new booklet on solving the puzzle with bladder cancer, which is available as a free download for people. And, you know, the thing I'm excited about being with you here today is that we could save a life today. If somebody realises their urine's not quite 100%, they should see the GP and get a simple litmus test and take it from there.
All right. Because there may be quite benign and harmless causes for it, rather than somebody going, oh, that's, I know what that means, I'm just going to brush it. I don't want to know about that. There are a whole lot of other things that could make it quite not a cancerous episode.
Absolutely. So look, don't be afraid, but just be reassured that you go to your GP and find out that it's a benign cause and something that's not a problem. But if it is a problem, it can be fixed. And most of the time we can fix that with keyhole approaches. We do have other approaches. As Tony mentioned, when we remove the bladder, you either have to have a conduit or a stoma, a bag, or you can have a neobladder. And part of the impetus of our meeting here with the Urological Society of Australia and New Zealand in Canberra, we've just been talking this morning about how we need to be offering patients more choices, as you said, not just the bag and the stoma, but the neobladder like Tony's had. And if I encourage patients or people who know people with bladder cancer that there are more and more options. And if they go and download our booklet, you'll certainly be able to read all about those options.
All right, and having had a bag for a different reason myself for a part of my life, I can tell you it's not the worst thing in the world either. It's if you think that that is the worst thing that's ever going to happen, there's a lot of other people worse off. And look, you're heading back to somewhere to join 849 other urologists in Canberra this weekend, Nathan.
That's right. Our national, I'm the convener of our national conference, which is here in Canberra, which is fantastic. It hasn't been here since 1993. But it's a gathering not only of urologists, but nurses and other people involved in urological care. And, you know, it's been a fantastic meeting so far. A lot of good national and international guests. And we're hopefully making people more aware of conditions such as bladder cancer.
All right. Thank you for coming in, Nathan. It's been lovely to meet you, Associate Professor Nathan Lawrenshook. And Tony, more lovely to meet you. I guess there were days in your life where you thought, I don't know whether I'm going to get to the end of next week, let alone to launch the foundation. So
I'm still having a crack and it's fantastic.
Never give up, my friend. And if you want to find out more, the website again, please, Nathan or Tony?
Bladdercancer.org.au.
All right. And find out more about it and how you should perhaps be given some early warnings and how you should react and maybe how you might be able to donate and continue or develop help with research into bladder cancer. Saturday breakfast done and dusted for today. My thanks to Pete Williams for putting the program together. As always, great producer, great company. Thank you to all of my guests who've come and shared their stories with us. It's been a lot of fun. Enjoy a mild weekend, about mid-20s today and tomorrow, and I'll see you for breakfast next Saturday. Cheers.